Hey, everybody. Welcome to the All In Podcast. We have an exciting episode today. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure to check out the other video that we posted today. We're doing a fantasy show with our guy, Dave Kluge from Fantasy Pros. He's going to be joining us once again. I'm joined, by, as always, by my co-host, my guy, Eli Cooper. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Excited. We're going to have, like you said, for those of you tuning into the audio version, you'll hear Dave come on and give some fantasy football advice. If you're watching on YouTube, you can catch the replay of that video on our channel as well. Excited for that, but yep. Also excited for some major news that came out of the NBA this week.
Yeah, so we had to jump on first. Originally, we were just going to do the fantasy show. We saw what was going down in the NBA. We figured we had to talk about it because, you know, we are NBA people first. First, we do want to remind you, we are presented by mybookie.ag. So go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code allinpod. You'll get a 100% sign up bonus, all types of gambling on mybookie.ag, sports gambling, really nice for us people in Ohio who cannot access some of the other sites. They've got a really good, casino as well. Blackjack, roulette, pretty much any kind of casino game you'd want to play. Mybookie.ag, use the promo code ALLINPOD to get a 100% sign-up bonus and to let them know that we sent you. So let's get started with this NBA talk, Coop. First thing, we have to talk blockbuster trade, two superstars, or at least former superstars, John Wall and Russell Westbrook, basically getting flipped between the Rockets and the Wizards. I think the Wizards also threw in a first-round pick.
Yes.
For the privilege of getting Russell Westbrook instead of John Wall. What were your thoughts about this deal?
So I thought the Rockets won this deal. I thought they won it big time.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is not because they're getting the best player in the deal. They are not. But the 2023 first-round pick to me and getting rid of Russell Westbrook's contract was crucial for them. And that the reason I bring up the 2023 pick, because people are like, oh, well, that pick is 3 years away. What does it matter? Well, if there's no change to the current rules of players coming out of high school, right, where they still have to do the one and done, if there's no change to the rules by that, that 2023 class will feature Imoni Bates, who is a junior right now and will arguably be is arguably the best player in high school, regardless of class, and will inevitably be the number one pick in the 2023 class if there is no amendment to the rule of players coming out straight out of high school. So to me, that pick could be worth something. And granted, you don't know that it's going to fall as the number one pick, right? But
yeah.
It could be leverage to get you to move up in the draft or whatever. It could be the number one pick. The Wizards have been pretty bad at times. And with, you know, Russell Westbrook has an injury or, you know, he leaves by then, you never know what could happen with that pick. So stockpiling picks in that draft to me is a plus, in just in case. You just want to have a shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can never be a bad thing. And again, it's, you know, getting rid of Westbrook's contract and getting a similar, style of player. I don't want to say level because they're not on the same level in any way, shape or form. They both play the same style, but Russ is just better at it, right? He's much better at that athletic point guard style of play than John Wall is. You know, you can argue certain aspects of their games, but to me, it was crucial for the Rockets to offload that Westbrook contract. For the Wizards, I don't really know what their thinking is here. Like, I'm trying to figure out what their angle is, how this benefits them. You know, they're not really in a win now mode. They don't have a roster, even with Russell Westbrook, that you really look at and says, you know, this is a contender in the Eastern Conference here. You know, so I'm not sure what their angle is. What do you think is like their, you know, mindset coming into this trade?
To get back in the playoffs. I think if you do this trade, you're probably looking at it. And you're thinking, you know, John Wall wants out, you know, as much as he loved D.C., quote unquote, and he had a really nice message I saw to D.C. He definitely wanted out. And I think the Wizards probably look at it and they think, you know, if we get Russ, I think at minimum we're the 7 seed. I actually don't hate their chances of becoming like in that 5-7 seed, really. I think that's probably the ceiling for them because, you know, Brad Beal, as much as, you know, he doesn't play defense and as much as Russell Westbrook doesn't play defense, two really good offensive players.
Right.
And in the East that, you know, doesn't have a ton of offensive loaded teams, I think they could actually be pretty good. Now, I will say this for John Wall. I think this move makes sense for him. I think I like the fit of him in Houston. I might even like that fit a little more than Russell Westbrook in Houston because, you know, he does have that similar style of Russell Westbrook, like you talk about.
Right.
And he's probably not as good as Russell Westbrook at it. But I think he's maybe a little bit more comfortable without the ball. And when he gets his opportunities in transition, he'll take them. Coming off his list of injuries, really, I wouldn't be surprised if he's okay with, you know, that secondary role. And, you know, the other thing, you know, what I would do to be a stripper in Houston right now, to have John Wall coming, teaming up with James Harden, the most notorious strip club fan in the NBA. And then you get John Wall. There's going to be a lot of college tuition paid in Houston in the next year. I'll tell you that right now. So from a Wizards perspective, I think they look at it and they think, you know, kind of like what I mentioned with the Suns and trading for Chris Paul, even though it's not like, oh, Chris Paul's going to put us over the top, win a championship. It's like, at some point, we got to do something to get back in the playoffs. We got to make a splash. I think Washington likes some pieces they have, actually. I think they really like Rui Hachimura. I think Bertans is, I guess, the best shooter in the league, right? Like, like they paid him a ton of money, probably more than what he was worth. Yeah. But, you know, they don't have much more other than that. And with Russ and Beal. But, you know, Brian is okay. And they add a couple more pieces. I think they look at it and they think, well, if we're the 5 seed, it's a huge success. Because I think then they have a real chance to win a first-round series. If they get to the second round, it's a wild success. Because, really, you know, if you're measuring Wizards' success over the years, you know, the highlight of the Wizards franchise is probably forcing a game 7 with the Celtics. And was that 2016 when they almost, John Wall had that amazing game 6. And they took him to game 7. That's probably the highlight of your career, your Wizards fandom, is the second round getting to a game 7. So I think if you make the second round, it's a huge success. Wall won it out. Westbrook, you kind of just flip the bad deals and hope for some excitement, I guess. So who do you think, who wins more games this year, Houston or Washington?
Wins more games? I'm going to say Washington. Because they're going to have, you know, just being in the East alone, they're going to have the easier schedule. And, you know, obviously, Russ is an upgrade from John Wall, assuming, you know, that they both stay healthy. John Wall has a lot of work to do. He hasn't really played in about 2 years, right, because of the multiple injuries that he's had. So, you know, he has a lot of rust to shake off anyway. So you can imagine Houston probably getting off to a slow start. I mean, they got off to a slow start when they had Westbrook. You're probably looking at the same thing here. I'm not 100% sold that Houston is a playoff team. Maybe they are, but I don't think their spot is booked after this, in my opinion, because like you don't know that John Wall is going to stay healthy for a full season because, you know, he's been out for so long. How often do we see a guy come back after like 2 years of not playing and be anywhere close to the same guy he was, and let alone being able to play a full set? Well, in this case, 72 game season, that's going to be condensed.
Yeah.
You know, where there's going to be a little bit more back to backs and things like that. So like, I don't love that. I don't love that for John Wall and for a team that really doesn't have much else besides James Harden, you know, as far as guys who can create their own shot, it doesn't bode well. And then also you got, you know, I did like their Christian Wood signing. I thought that was a decent pickup for them. They picked up Boogie, so they're taking a chance on both of the Kentucky guys who haven't played in forever. So I guess we'll just kind of see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, do you think Harden sticks around, or do you think they're still trying to move him?
Well, to me, this might indicate that they are trying to move him, because you know, you don't really make this deal planning to still try to win a championship, if you ask me. So I think they're still kind of in the position where, like, if we don't get the offer we want for Harden, we'll just keep him and you know, just, you know, play it out. And then if not, they will, you know, I mean, or if they do get the offer that they want for James Harden, they'll absolutely take it and be like, perfect. Let's go back into rebuild mode.
I wonder what that offer is and who it comes from. Cause you look at the teams that would have a chance to get him. I don't know if the Nets quite have enough, might have to be a three teamer, but
yeah,
you know, and I'll be honest, I'm biased. I love John Wall. I just always have. I don't know. I loved him out of high school. I loved him at Kentucky. My first NBA game I ever went to was in Washington. And then Raptors went down there back in like 2013, I think. So I'm a little bit biased towards John Wall, and I hope he has a ton of success in Houston. So, all right. Anything else?
Yeah, you know, last thing. Like, I don't want to make it seem like I don't like John Wall. I do. Like, John Wall was, and throughout his career, has been a very good point guard. Yeah. And he's not a severe downgrade from Russell Westbrook or anything like that, but he is a downgrade. But you know, it's just interesting to see how he comes back off of some major injuries. Someone who relied on so much athleticism. I am rooting for him, though. I am.
Yeah, and it depends on the health. You know, he could be better than Russell Westbrook. We don't know. We just haven't seen him so long, and because of the injuries, we kind of have to assume he's not going to be the best version of himself we've ever seen. But he might be. Yeah. I hope he is. Okay, let's move on to the Lakers. A lot of headlines for them, as always. So LeBron signed a 2-year extension. AD signed a 5-year deal.
Yes.
I think that was the huge shock, right? We were kind of expecting a 1+1 or a 2-year deal. And he came out and said, no, let's do it for real. I want the 5-year deal. Thoughts on these guys?
Well, two things. It tells me that LeBron had no plans of retiring after – you know, his contract ended here. I think he had his contract now runs through 2023, I believe.
Right.
Where it would have ended in 2021, which is one of the things that maybe AD was worried about. Right. So this kind of with both of these deals happening around the same time, this seems like Rich Paul getting two guys in a room. Like, what's our plan going forward? And they were both like, let's go all in. You know what I mean? Sure. Let's see how many we can get out of this. Now, AD's contract doesn't necessarily match up with LeBron's, but by the time LeBron's contract is over, I assume at this point that this is LeBron's last contract. This one, yeah. I assume that this will be his last contract. Now, granted, Father Time seems undefeated, has that one loss against LeBron so far.
Yeah.
So we'll see how, you know, what his plans are after that. But I still think this kind of gives AD, you know, more incentive to sign long-term. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to have LeBron for the first 3 years of this of this 5-year deal that I'm signing. Yeah. And then I can really kind of reevaluate at the back end in those last 2 years, you know, kind of like a, you know, you're in a similar New Orleans Pelican situation where maybe they can replace, let's assume LeBron retires, they replace that max cap slot with whatever star will be available in free agency at that point, and then you kind of go from there to pair it up for the Lakers. So I think it sets the Lakers up well. You know, now looking long-term, if you're trying to attract free agents still, you're like, hey, you know, look, you're going to have an opportunity to come play with Anthony Davis at some point because he's going to be here for 5 years. So it's a win for all parties. You know, for me, which is funny because the last time we talked about this, I said he should sign the 1+1. But now that LeBron has re-signed, I think it's actually it's a good idea.
So let me ask you this. Can I throw out a scenario that might show that it's actually not LeBron's last contract?
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you because I really don't know, and you are the prospect expert, but when is Bronny James NBA draft eligible?
So as of right now, barring any changes to players come out of high school, he would be 2024.
His draft would be 2024 draft?
He would be in the 2024 draft.
So right, is that right after the 2023 season?
That would be right after the 2023 season, yes.
So would that...
Or no, I'm sorry. It would be the year after the 2023
season. Okay. But if they change it to high schoolers can come out, then maybe it matches up?
He would line up, yes. And so that is the overwhelming thought amongst NBA executives. They think it will change by 2022. Okay. So maybe we are looking at something here.
Well, that was my thought. As soon as he signed it, I'm like, why add 2 years now? Like, you know, because really I look at it and it's like, why did he do this? I'm not really like, he didn't need to do this. And the trend we've seen from these superstars is to not do this.
Yeah.
But if his thought is, and you see AD go all in for 5 years, you know, why doesn't LeBron either one go in for 5 years or wait and see? Like, maybe he's trying to match it up and play with Bronny if Bronny makes it to the NBA, which I don't. We always talk like that's a given, right? Like
yeah, you know,
when, like when Bronny makes the NBA, like that's not a given at all.
Right.
But that would be my thought of why he might do it. So let me ask you this, because I agree with all your points. So I don't have too much to add. Okay, they've got AD through the next 5 years, including the one they just won. How many championships? How do they win in the next 5 years?
Well, I would say they're the favorites to win it again in this upcoming season.
I'll set the over under total championships at 2.5. So include the one they just won, 1.5 more championships.
Okay. So I think I'm gonna take the under.
Okay.
And the only reason why is because LeBron is getting older. And at some point, that has to matter. It hasn't so far. At some point, that has to matter. Like, father time has to kick in at some point. I don't know when. The other thing is, it's really hard to win championships in the NBA just because it's so hard to keep rosters together. But to really, you know, they've got one. I think they win another one. Three-peating is probably the hardest thing to do in the NBA. So,
yeah.
I don't know that, you know, a 38-year-old LeBron, you know, along with AD and whatever pieces they have at that point is going to be enough to three-peat. With how well the West is getting better and better seemingly every year. So I would say I'm going to take the under. I think next year will be probably the last one. I think they make deep playoff runs. Right. And, you know, for the rest of LeBron's career, barring any injury and health and stuff like that. But championship wise, I think they get two, maybe a loss in the Western Conference Finals or the finals in that third year. And then it kind of starts to fizzle out.
That's about what I was thinking, because like I'm thinking if they're going to win more than one more, it kind of has to be the three-peat.
Right.
Because of LeBron's age. And I mean, you know, who knows? They could go out and sign or trade for Giannis, or and this blows up. Right. But just like looking at the team they have, like it's so hard to do it again. And like they're the favorites this year, but like they just got done playing 2 months
ago. Yeah, exactly.
And then they're gonna go on this grueling grind again. I think that's really tough to do. So I'd probably go under 1.5 more championships, but I do think they do get one more at some point. If it's not this year, then maybe the year after.
I wonder what kind of odds we can get for my bookie on that.
To three-peat or to win the championship this year?
For them to win it this year.
Oh, you could probably get pretty good, right? I'd say plus 450.
I think I'd take that.
I think I would take that too.
I think I would use the promo code AllInPod to do that too.
What I would do is I would use the promo code AllInPod at mybookie.ag, and then I would go. What you do is you go to the sports book, okay? You go to NBA. I'm gonna pull it up right now so we can tell the viewers exactly what the odds are. If I can get this to work, you know, because who are the favorites anyway? Like, I don't know that it's the Clippers. The Mavs are up there. So right now it's on mybookie.ag. You have Lakers plus 250. So 2.5 to 1. You've got Bucks 6 to 1, Clippers 6.5 to 1, Celtics 16 to 1, Heat 18 to 1, Nuggets 18 to 1, Nets 6 to 1. So the Nets actually have tied for the second best odds. And then
that's not bad.
What about this one? The Raptors 25 to 1. I think I might go in on that one. So go to mybookie.ag. Use the promo code AllInPod, get 100% sign up bonus. Let them know that we sent you, and you can put your futures bet on who's going to win the championship this year. Okay, guys, that is all the NBA stuff we had right now. If you're listening on audio, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Fantasy Pro Expert Dave Kluge. If you are watching on YouTube, head over to that video on our channel. Subscribe while you're there and turn on notifications so you know when we go live, which we are about to do with this video. We'll be right back, guys.
See you guys. What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, joined by my guy, Mike Badzik. How's it going, bro?
It's going good. I'm very excited to be extra quiet on this podcast today. We are joined by an expert, aren't we, Coop?
Yes, we are. Dave Kluge, correct?
Kluge, you got it.
Kluge, yep. Yes, I got it this time. Dave Kluge is back in the flesh to help us with our week 13 and beyond fantasy advice. So for those of you who play fantasy football, stay tuned throughout the episode. If you have start sit questions, you can ask them. We're live right now on Facebook and YouTube. So you can ask them and we will share your comment on the screen. For example, you can see it up there on the screen. So if you're on Facebook or YouTube, leave us a comment and we'll get to it later in the show. For those of you listening to the audio platform, welcome back. And for those of you tuning into the live, you can check out our NBA conversation on our YouTube channel as well. So if you're watching the live, you'll see it tomorrow. If you're watching the replay, you can find it on our channel. So let's get right into it and talk about one of the worst teams in the NFL, the Eagles, who play the Packers. And, you know, for one, let's start with Carson Wentz. You know, he's been abysmal this year. He's been the subject of a lot of criticism, not just by fantasy managers, but also just from Eagles fans like myself in general. First thing we'll discuss when it comes to Wentz is, you know, let's talk about him from a fantasy perspective. Is he startable this week in standard 10-team leagues?
Well, I think he's got to be at least startable, if not at the very tail end. I mean, there might be some better options out there. You know, I've seen Tannehill popping up on some waivers and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't hate Wentz. The core in this team that I really don't like is their receivers. Yeah. But Wentz has the weapons. You know, we've seen that he can run a little bit when he gets out in open space. He's got Carson Wentz. He's got – or I'm sorry, he's got Dallas Goedert. And a huge thing, he's got Zach Ertz coming back this week as well. Mm. Another big thing is that the Packers, they just get gashed through the air by running backs. And when you're talking about a pass-catching running back, Miles Sanders is that guy. So I like Carson Wentz this week going up against Green Bay. I think it's going to be a competitive game. I don't see any situation where the Eagles take a big lead and have to fall back on the run. So, yeah. You know, Carson Wentz, he might throw a pick or two here and there. He might take some sacks. But I think that his upside is going to offset that pretty well.
Yeah, I like that as well. So, you know, this is kind of we're in must-win territory, right, as, you know, the Eagles, as far as the Eagles go, because the NFC East – I don't know if you want to say it's heating up, but it's slowly cooking, I guess.
It's de-thawing.
Right, it's de-thawing. There you go. That's the perfect word for it. You know, so if they do want to make the playoffs, you know, I think this is one of the games on their schedule where it's certainly winnable, right? We've seen the Packers lose to lesser teams before, so it wouldn't be a shock to see them get upset by the Eagles here. But it's certainly going to require Carson Wentz to be a lot better this week. And really the Packers defense is one of their weaknesses. So, you know, maybe not that it's horrible, but maybe that's an opportunity, even though the Seahawks defense was horrible. Could be an opportunity for Wentz and that Eagles offense to get back on track.
Yeah, it could be. You know, one of the things that I am interested in with the Packers, I think that, you know, Aaron Jones is obviously a running back one, you know, in pretty much all leagues. But are you concerned at all about Jamal Williams cutting into his load?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I'm going to be watching in this game is Aaron Jones's usage. I was actually just on a pod last night and we were talking about this. But after that monster game that he had early in the season where he put up, what, 43 points or something like that, he really hasn't done too much. And, you know, me, when I'm building my team, I like to, you know, I prefer chasing volume over touchdowns. And Jones's volume just hasn't been that good this year. He's seen 54% or less of his team snaps in over half the games that he's played. And the most that he's seen in a single game has only been 71%. So that type of usage really doesn't put him in the RB1 category for me. I've got him as a high-end RB2. And obviously, you know, he can have you those weak winning games. But really, you know, he's an RB2 for me.
So in a game where game script is probably going to favor them this week, is Aaron Jones maybe a better DFS option, do you think?
You know, I'd go with Jamal Williams. Aaron Jones, he's got that really high price tag. When you're looking at Aaron Jones on DFS, he's being valued as an RB1, and I just don't see it. So if you're in tournaments, you know, where you're trying to get as many points as you can, you're not really so much looking to beat the spread, Aaron Jones is somebody that you want to have because he's got that huge upside. But if you're just looking for somebody that's going to provide you a safe floor for not a lot of cash, Jamal Williams is the guy.
Gotcha. Yeah, and one of the guys for the Eagles who I rode for a lot of this year as a pickup was Travis Fulgham. And he was solid for a lot of the year. And then it seemed like last week kind of just fell off a cliff watching the game. I don't know what the exact snap count was, but he wasn't out there very much. Are we off of him? Is it over for him?
Yeah, because he actually fell off prior to last week. He fell off about 3 weeks ago, and he fell off the day that Dallas Goedert came back onto the field. Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, when you look at it, Travis Fulgham was putting up insane numbers. Over a four-week stretch, I believe he was a wide receiver two or wide receiver three over that time. But there was no Alshon Jeffrey. There was no DeSean Jackson. There was no Jalen Reagor. There was no Zach Ertz. There was no Dallas Goedert. So I think it was just kind of a situation where he was the only guy out there that Wentz could throw the ball to. And then as soon as all the other pass catchers started healing up, you just saw his production disappear. So he's droppable as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
Yeah, and Wentz is also the kind of QB who likes to lock in on who his favorite, you know, guy at that time is.
Yeah,
I think even like when you go back to like last year when everyone was hurt, he relied heavily on Ertz, Goddard, and Greg Ward at the time was like the practice squad player that we picked up who was, you know, getting increased volume. And that just happened to be Travis Fulgham this year, even though I actually like him. I think he's a good receiver, you know, and he played really well. But, you know, with the offense playing this bad, it's not an offense that supports too many pass catchers. And, you know, now that we mentioned some of the Eagles pass catchers, before we, you know, move on to the next game, with Zach Ertz coming back potentially this week, does it downgrade Goddard or does it upgrade him?
No, I don't know if it upgrades him, but I think that Goddard is still going to be, you know, a top five tight end for the rest of the season. Over the last 2 weeks when Ertz was out, Goddard played 100% of his team snaps, which is just unheard of in today's day and age. He caught a touchdown in each of those games. But even when both of them were healthy, when Zach Ertz and Goddard were both on the field, Goddard was outpacing him in targets. We only saw it for 2 weeks, but Goddard had 17 targets to Ertz's 14. So, you know, Ertz's injuries have been just piling up over the last few years. And I think that Goddard is the go-to guy right now. And he's the only pass catcher I think that's really worth owning in fantasy.
So you're not even considering Ertz then?
I mean, Ertz is going to be a like I said, he had 14 targets in the first two games, but I think he's more on the lower end of the tight end ones. It's really tough to gauge, though, because when you look at tight ends this year, you've got Travis Kelce, you've got Darren Waller, and then after that, I mean, it's anybody's guess. Even these guys that are ranked 3-4 in the week, they're putting up duds. So it's really, really tough to predict, but I think the Goddard is the guy to have over Ertz.
All right. So let's move on to our next game that we have here, Titans versus Browns, which is like the game of the week almost, right? A lot of playoff implications here. Both 8-3. Yes, you heard that right. The Cleveland Browns are 8-3, and the Eagles are 3-7-1. We're just going to let that sink in for a second. Whatever. Titans versus Browns this week. Let's talk about this one from a fantasy perspective and a DFS perspective, because Derrick Henry, I think on DraftKings right now, is like 9,200 price range. with a good matchup, are you paying that premium for Derrick Henry this week? Is it worth it?
I was just having this conversation with somebody earlier today, because when you look at it, the two guys that are in a tier of their own in DFS this week are Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook. And you want to have one of those guys because, you know, they're both they're the you know, highest priced guys for a reason. But I think Dalvin Cook is actually the guy that you want this week over Derrick Henry. He's about $500 cheaper and going up against the Jaguars. I think he's the lock for the RB1 this week. The Browns, they've been gashed a couple times, and we know that Derrick Henry only gets better as the season goes on. But I'm shying away from Derrick Henry this year or this week at that price tag.
Yeah, pretty hefty price to pay for someone like him. Now, let's take a look at from the other side. Nick Chubb, from a DFS standpoint, is Nick Chubb a good play? I think he was coming in at like 7,100, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I think he is a good play. But I really want to see how they split carries in this matchup, because Chubb has seen a steadily increasing role ever since returning from IR. He saw 43% of his team snaps the first week back, 45% the last week or the next week, and then he saw 61% of the snaps last week, which was his second highest of the year. So Hunt has been a lot more efficient as a runner when he's playing that relief role for Chubb. But I think with the Titans allowing the sixth most points to running backs this year, I think that they're both really good DFS plays. I mean, it's not quite a 50-50 split. It's more of a 60-40 split. Yeah. But let me look. I think it was week two that they both they were playing against Cincinnati in week two, and they combined for almost 50 points that week. Yeah. 48.9 points between the two of them. They each put up a minimum of 23 points, and I think we're going to see that type of game again. The Titans have not been good against the run this year, so I like Chubb, and I like Hunt in DFS. I think that they're both going to have huge weeks.
That is great news for me, because I have Kareem Hunt in the league where I desperately need a win to make the playoffs. So,
well, it's kind of funny. If you look at his game log, his best games came when Chubb was out there. You know, right. Chubb went down and everyone was like, oh, Kareem Hunt, you know, that's going to be an awesome play for the next few weeks. And he saw more volume, but his efficiency plummeted. So I think that he's better when Chubb is out there on the field.
Agreed. Now, let's talk about Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield this week, is he a good streaming option if you're, you know, maybe you have Tom Brady who's on a bye? Is he a good streaming option against a pretty vulnerable Titans defense?
He could be. You know, I don't hate Baker Mayfield this week, but I think that there's got to be some better options out there. Derek Carr is a guy that got dropped by a lot of people after last week. I think he put up negative points in most scoring formats, and that was a good matchup that he was supposed to smash. So he got dropped in a lot of leagues, and Derek Carr actually has a really nice matchup this week. So I'm not huge on Baker Mayfield because that volatility really scares me. You see it all the time in these games where, you know, everyone's saying, all right, this is the week to start Baker, and then you plug him in and he goes for 110 yards and two picks. So I'd be a little nervous to start Baker. I think for this week, Derek Carr is my favorite streaming option.
Gotcha. Anybody from this game, DFS-wise, that people might not know about but might be a good play for your lineup?
I don't have his cost off the top of my head right now, but Anthony Firkser is a tight end right now that he's outside the top 20 in the price range. You got to scroll way down there to see Anthony Firkser. But ever since Taylor Lewan went to IR, Jonnu Smith has not been running routes. Jonnu Smith is actually out for this week too, so I guess that doesn't really matter as much. But I think Anthony Firkser is going to see a lot of opportunity this week route running. So I really like him as a deep tight end play if you're looking to save some money. Like we said, once you get past that first two, you know, it could be anybody that can go off. So why not go for the guy that's going for, you know, a few thousand dollars cheaper than the Goddards out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get on to our next game, guys, remember, use the promo code ALLINPOD at MyBookieAG, where you can get 100% of your initial deposit match with a minimum of $45. Keep sending us those start sit questions. I do see a few of them have come in. We will get to those after we get through some of these games here. So continue to send those in to us either on YouTube or Facebook, wherever you're watching. We will get to that later on in the show. Don't forget to download the All In Network app, which is available now in the Apple Store and Google Play Store. You can follow our social media, listen to our podcast, audio versions as well. And we'll have some other our other All In Network shows coming soon. So make sure you download that on your smartphone.
Can I say something quickly about the 8-win Browns?
Yes.
8 wins. Twice the Bengals, Washington, Cowboys, Colts. That was a good one. And then you have Texans in a monsoon, Eagles in a monsoon, and Jags. I don't think they're actually that good.
They might not be. I do think they still beat the Eagles monsoon or not. We're just that bad. But I think you have a point there. I do think you have a point there.
All right. Coming from a Steelers fan too. I mean, I've seen that Steelers.
Totally unbiased.
Yes, a lot of criticism about the Steelers schedule. We will actually get to them a little bit later. Let's stop in the NFC South and talk about Saints and Falcons. Taysom Hill is 2-0 as a starter. I didn't love the move of them going to him over Jameis, but so far it has paid off. Granted, not against super tough competition, but they get the Falcons again here for the second time in his three starts. Is Taysom Hill a legitimate starter in season-long fantasy this week?
I think so. I've got him as the very, very tail end. I've got him as my 10th overall quarterback right now. But yeah, I think that rushing upside that he gives you is insane. I mean, when's the last time we've seen a quarterback run in 4 touchdowns in 2 games, let alone his first 2 games as a starter? That's just kind of a cheat code when you're playing fantasy football. I mean, this guy, he's racked up almost 100 yards right now and 4 touchdowns. That alone, when you're looking at those 4 touchdowns, that's equivalent to 6 passing touchdowns. So when you've got a guy like that that's running the ball and they trust him around the goal line, I think that he's a QB1 for sure. I don't think that I'm, you know, reinventing the wheel by saying this, but he has been a huge problem for Alvin Kamara. That's the biggest thing right now.
Yeah.
I got him.
That was the next thing I was going to get to is, where are you at on the panic meter for Alvin Kamara, where most people who have Kamara are probably going into the playoffs, right? I would say in most cases. So going into the playoffs with, you know, Taysom Hill probably starting for the next few weeks here, on a scale of 1 to 10, where's your panic meter?
About 9.5. I mean, you gotta hope that Breeze is coming back soon, man. I mean, Kamara was putting up what he was. There was a point, I think it was around week 6 or so, where Alvin Kamara was the wide receiver 1. Like, if you took away all of his rushing abilities, he was the number 1 scoring wide receiver just having what he was doing. So I think that Kamara is actually going to have a decent week this week, only because of the weird situation with them playing Atlanta twice in the last 3 weeks. You know, Atlanta, they've got fresh eyes on Taysom Hill. They just saw him 2 weeks ago. They're going to have a game plan developed to stop him. I think Sean Payton, being the smart man that he is, he's going to find a way to get some of those easy dump-off passes. You've got Michael Thomas that loves running the slant. You've got Kamara that runs those really easy screens. So I think that they're going to expect a heavy dose of Taysom Hill running the ball. And I think that the Saints' game plan in this one is going to get to get Kamara and Thomas going a little bit more than we've seen them do so far together.
Gotcha. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
After this week, I think it's only this week because it's that weird scenario with the Falcons. Going forward, though, I think that, you know, Taysom Hill is really going to hit the touchdown opportunities for Kamara.
When is Breeze supposed to come back? Week 15?
I believe he's eligible to return from IR after next week, but they haven't made I haven't heard any updates so far how he's progressing or anything like that. You know, it's only a 3-week IR, but there's no guarantee that he comes back week 4. Right.
One of the topics in our league today was Michael Thomas. There was a trade made for Michael Thomas today. You know, a kind of a trade of, here's a couple of pieces for Michael Thomas. He hasn't been that good this year. Are we giving up on Michael Thomas?
I mean, yeah, he hasn't really done much this year. What we saw last year was just a historically great season, and that's why he was getting drafted in the first round. You know, a lot of leagues, he was the only wide receiver getting drafted in the first round this year, and he hasn't lived up to anything close to that, whether it was Breeze, when Winston came in for Breeze's relief, or when Taysom Hill was starting. He just hasn't been able to get it going. 2 weeks ago, Taysom Hill threw the ball to him 12 times, and I think he only caught, I think it was 5 or 6 of those passes. I mean, he just... Last year, that guy was a vice grip. They'd throw the ball to him, and it didn't matter where it was. He was pulling every single ball in. And this year, that just hasn't been the same story. So I think that he should be valued as kind of a low-end wide receiver, too, based off his production this year.
Yeah, so he's getting a lot of targets since Taysom Hill has stepped in. Like you said, he did get 12 against Atlanta.
I think he saw 6 last week.
Right, he saw 6 last week, and I think they only threw the ball, I think, 18 times or something like that. And against Atlanta, he did have 9 for 104, but he hasn't gotten in the end zone in any of the games that he's played in this year. So, there's legitimate concern there when it comes to Michael Thomas. Now, to give more context into the trade today, it was Robert Woods and Wayne Gallman who was traded for Michael Thomas and some other piece that really didn't
matter. CeeDee Lamb.
But, yeah, CeeDee Lamb, who's irrelevant at this point because of how bad the Cowboys are.
This is a full redraft league? Like, redraft no keepers league. Or anything? Yeah, no, I like the Woods, and I like the Gallman side, personally. Especially if the team that was getting Gallman, if they're making a push to the playoffs right now, Gallman's got, what, 6 touchdowns in his last 5 games? I mean, that dude is running hot right now.
Well, yeah. and that's exactly so. You can see Sean, who is Nell on Twitter. Yeah, the guy who traded for those guys is in a must-win game this week. So that was kind of the rationale.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Woods and Michael Thomas on its own is pretty even when you're looking at what they've done so far this season. I mean, Woods is almost taking on that Michael Thomas role, seeing double-digit targets almost every single week. He's kind of the focal point of that offense. And then you get the bonus of throwing a guy like Wayne Gallman in there. I think that side came out on top.
Mm. Do you think Wayne Gallman holds on to that spot with Devontae Freeman coming back?
I don't think so, because Freeman looked terrible when he was out there. I mean, I think he had 2 runs that he ripped off for like 15 or 20 yards. But outside of that, if you watch that game, he was just getting slammed at the line nonstop. He wasn't doing too much with the touches he's had. That team has looked re-energized since Gallman took over, and yeah. I think that they're going to ride the hot end. So I think Freeman's going to come back in as the change of pace back. I think it's Gallman's backfield through the end of the year.
You would think. Now, it is the NFC East, so anything's a go there. So let's get on to another NFC East team, Washington football team, taking on Mike's beloved Steelers this week. It's not really a question of who's going to win this game, so we'll talk about this one more from a fantasy perspective. Benny Snell, obviously, with James Conner on IR, got a large workload, I would say, last week against the Ravens. But another tough defensive front. Is Benny Snell a good DFS play this week? And where does he fall in your range of rankings for running backs this week and season long?
I'm not crazy about Benny Snell. I really like Anthony McFarlane. I think that he is unbelievably talented, and I'm kind of upset that he didn't get the touches that I thought he deserved last week. But it's really tough to predict because both of those guys have shown, glimmers of being really good in the past. McFarlane, he had a couple big runs this year. Snell, he looked decent in a few games last year when Connor was out. So I think Tomlin is the type of guy that's going to ride the hot hand. I think that, if you saw when the game started last week, they were both getting some touches. Snell was doing more with his, and he kind of took over as the game went on. And I think you'd see that this week. If McFarlane gets off with a hot hand, they're going to keep feeding it. So I think that the risk with Benny Snell is way too high to justify playing him in a lot of lineups.
Yeah, and the thing about the Steelers is they just don't run the ball that much. Even like when Connor was out there, like they just don't run it. Even this game against the Ravens, like you would have thought in this type of a game they'd run it a lot, just based on the style and the two teams playing and how you thought you wanted to win that game. They still threw it like 50 times. So
yeah, and it's probably because your short passing game a lot of times works as runs, right? You have three receivers who can catch and make plays after the catch, at any range. So I think that's kind of, since they go to a lot of 5 wide sets and run these short passes, get it out of Ben's hands quick. That's kind of replacing your run production in some of these games, which is probably why you're seeing them run it a little bit less.
And that's Big Ben's MO for how long now? I mean, what, he set the record for pass attempts. What was it, 800 something a few years back? Mm-hmm. That's what they do. But you think the Steelers are winning this game for sure? I've heard a lot of people predicting the Washington football team win.
It might be. I mean, if you look at the Steelers like in the Mike Tomlin, Big Ben era, this is the type of game that they lose. Out of conference against a bad team, this is the type of game that they don't show up for. They'll show up against the good teams, but this type of game they typically will maybe lay a dud. I just think that those guys are so amped up with this undefeated thing that's not going to happen. So I think that they're definitely going to win.
I hope you're right, but this just feels a little bit like a trap game to me.
It does. And I think Washington's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they looked really good against the awful Cowboys on Thanksgiving, but Alex Smith has somehow become the least awful quarterback in the division. And he's actually he actually played pretty well last week. Turned it over a little bit in his substitute appearance against the Giants, but since then has settled in. And like, you know, he's the kind of guy where he won't mess it up for you. And with the way these Redskins running backs are playing, and obviously you have Terry McLaurin, there's a legitimate, you know, argument that Washington could pull off the upset here, which would, in my opinion, spur them on to win the NFC East because, you know, Mike, we talked about this in the last episode. We're looking at probably a 6-win, you know, team coming from this division. I think, and that was factoring in Washington probably not winning this game. If they get a win here, I think they almost book their way with just a couple of other NFC East wins, book their way into the playoffs with an upset here.
We don't have to talk about this game too much, but I do want to point out too, I mean, the Steelers are very susceptible to big plays. The way that they play their defense, they play everybody up front. They run a lot of blitzes. And when you look at those advanced stats for Antonio Gibson, when it comes to juke rate, evaded tackles, burst, all that stuff, he ranks top 10 in almost every single category. If anybody's going to be able to rip off, you know, a couple of huge runs against the Steelers, it's going to be Antonio Gibson. So that I've got Antonio Gibson as a smash play this week because I think that he's going to, I think he's going to have a solid week against the Steelers.
Yeah, I do like Antonio Gibson as well. Even in a tough matchup, I do like Antonio Gibson this week.
And but really, the Steelers' run defense is not that good.
Right.
And Bud Dupree getting hurt doesn't help with that. So I like Gibson too.
Yeah. Now, before we move on, I think we should talk about Terry McLaurin. And the reason I say that is, Dave, you retweeted an interesting tweet a few weeks back that comparing Terry McLaurin and DK Metcalf, who, you know, granted, DK Metcalf is having this incredible year this year. But when you look at the numbers, Terry McLaurin is right there, and he's had, what, five other, you know, QBs thrown in the ball, and none of them have been nearly as good as Russell Westbrook. Yeah. So is he in the discussion with, like, top 10, maybe even top 5 wide receivers in the league?
Oh, my, absolutely. I mean, from fantasy, you got to put him as wide receiver 1. He's probably in that, like, 10 to 12 range towards the bottom. But as far as pure talent, I think that guy's a top 5 receiver. You know, you got DeAndre DeAndre Hopkins, you got Devontae Adams, you got DK Metcalf. Once you get past those three guys, I think you start putting Terry McLaurin in that conversation. I mean, he reminds me a lot of what we saw with Allen Robinson when he was on Jacksonville and when he's in Chicago right now, still dealing with the same thing. Right. You've seen it with Devontae Parker when he's, you know, never knows who is going to be throwing the ball to him. And Terry McLaurin is that type of guy that he just compiles numbers every single week, regardless of who was under center. He was somebody this offseason that I was fading a little bit because of the Dwayne Haskins and Alex Smith, not knowing who the quarterback was going to be there. Yeah. I got him in one league and I wish I had him in more because that man, he's just every single week goes out there and gets it done.
Yeah. I think Alex Smith is actually good of all the QBs that they have. He's the best option for them. You know, simply because, you know, he's got the experience as a starter. You know, again, he's a great game manager. He can support good fantasy receivers. So I think that's actually been kind of a benefit for him.
And you've seen it every single time that they're in crunch time. He's not looking at anybody except Terry McLaurin. I mean, he is dropping back. He's locking his eye. As soon as he sees him with an inch of separation, he's gunning the ball at him.
Yeah. All right. So let's get on to Bills versus Niners. Niners trying to claw their way back into the playoff picture, you know, with that extras. You know, seventh playoff team this year. They are still in the hunt. Bills, big game for them. They're trying to help their seeding there in the AFC. Is this a upgrade or downgrade matchup for Josh Allen with the Niners defense getting healthy?
I think an upgrade as opposed to last week or just overall on his season average?
Generally, yeah. Are you upgrading him in your rankings or lowering
him a little bit? I'm pushing him down a little bit. This 49ers defense, last year we saw that they could just swarm the ball. We saw it earlier this year before the injury started to pile up. And, it worries me a little bit. Josh Allen has that rushing upside, like we talked about with Taysom Hill and some of these other guys, that's going to offset him, and it's going to keep his floor relatively safe. But we've also seen Josh Allen with a 35, 40-point weeks, and I don't think we're going to see that against the 49ers. I think his ceiling's probably capped at about 25, 28 points this week.
Now, with the Bills receiving core, obviously, you know, Stephon Diggs has been incredible this year. Doesn't look like John Brown's going to be back for this week. I guess you kind of have to play that by ear. I'm not sure what his injury status or report was. So let's talk a little bit about Cole Beasley in the slot, where, you know, the Niners outside corners have been really good. If there's anywhere you can kind of attack them, it would be from the slot where Cole Beasley operates. Is Cole Beasley someone on your radar for DFS this week?
Absolutely. That he puts up such a safe floor. When I was looking at his numbers last week, and it blew me away because I expected him to be, you know, kind of floating around, you know, like having some of those games where he's only pulling in one or two catches. He pulls in four catches every single week at a minimum. So when you're looking for somebody with a safe floor, which I think once you start dropping way down on that DFS list and you're getting to those wide receivers that are costing you $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, you're not always looking for somebody that's going to, you know, hope to pull in a touchdown. You're looking for that guy that's going to pull in a few catches, and that's Cole Beasley. So I like him a lot, but especially if John Brown can't play, Gabriel Davis is a guy that I'm going after. He has had an amazing season so far as a rookie. He's just getting better and better as the year goes on, and I really like Gabriel Davis this week as well.
Agreed. I am a fan of Gabriel Davis. Now let's talk about the other side, Niners. Raheem Mostert looked decent in his return after missing a few weeks. How do you feel about Mostert this week for season-long and for DFS?
Well, he's kind of an enigma. He's a lot like Aaron Jones, what I was saying earlier. You know, when you're putting the guys up in that RB1 category, those are the guys that you want to be getting 80 to 100% of their team snaps, and Mostert isn't getting that. He's getting, you know, 50 to 60% of his team snaps every single week, but he's one of the fastest guys in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And if he can hit that hole, he's gone. I mean, we've seen it four or five times already this year where, you know, he just needs a couple inches of space. He could squeeze through there and pop off for the end zone. So I haven't checked Mostert's price in DFS this week, but, you know, he's a guy that every single week can go off for 30, 40 points. So, there's never a price too high for somebody like Mostert. For whatever reason, I like him a lot more than I like Aaron Jones. I think it's because he's got that speed. Aaron Jones doesn't really bring anything special to the table. He just, you know, they design up some plays for him that work well, where Mostert is just an athlete and he can get it done.
Yeah. So any guys from this game that you're watching out for or in DFS and or as possible, you know, players in your season-long lineups?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously want to see what IU can do coming back off the injury. Mm. That'll be interesting. Yeah. But Debo Samuel, man, he caught 11 of 13 targets for 133 yards last week.
Yeah.
He hadn't cracked, I think it was like 65 yards or something prior to that. So it looked like, you know, Debo was somebody that was getting drafted in the fifth, sixth round this year in redraft formats and was not good when he was healthy, then went to IR for all this time, and then comes back and just explodes. So I'm going to be watching him again to see if he can do that, because he was kind of similar to that last year. I actually looked the numbers up. In the first half of the season last year, he was averaging 3.1 receptions and 32 yards per game. On the back half of the season, he upped his receptions to 4.4 per game and 72 yards, and then scored two touchdowns in that stretch. So there's a lot of players that get better as the season goes on. And Debo, we haven't seen him play a long career, but in his two seasons, he seems to be somebody that warms up as the season progresses. So I want to see if he can keep this momentum going into this game.
Yeah, it's good to see him get healthy and back on the field. He's explosive. So I'm excited to see how they use him this week. Next game we're going to get to, and it's the last one that we have. This game has been pushed to Tuesday because of the scheduling conflicts with the Ravens last week. We have Cowboys and Ravens. And again, Cowboys in that desperate must-win situation. But the Ravens are too, falling to 6-5. They're trying to stay afloat because they're now amongst these teams that are in the hunt in that AFC playoff race. For the Cowboys and Zeke, from a fantasy perspective, are you considering benching Zeke? Is that, I can't believe I'm saying these words out loud, but are you actually considering Zeke if you have other options available?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with like guys we talked about earlier, you know, Wayne Gallman, Benny Snell, these other guys that are in pretty good positions right now. Zeke is starting to seed carries to Tony Pollard. Mm-hmm. I think the team realizes that this is a lost season. So you got Zeke's tied up for what, $65 million?
Crazy.
Why risk getting Zeke injured when you just lost Dak for the year? I mean, I think that, you know, Tony Pollard has actually looked better. He's averaging more yards per carry than Zeke has. He's starting to get more touches every single week. And yeah, it just is. you feel crazy asking the question. I feel kind of crazy answering it. But yeah, if you're able to pick up Devontae Booker, if you've got Wayne Gallman, if you've got Gio Bernard, I'd be starting those guys over Zeke this week.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy because yesterday I had this discussion with my younger brother who rosters Zeke, and he was considering assuming maybe Galladay might be healthy. He was thinking about he has Miles Sanders, he has David Montgomery. Those two both were starting in his running back slots, and we play in a two flex league. So he was debating between Galladay and either Goddard and Zeke in his two flex spots. Those are the three guys he was considering. With Galladay being hurt, maybe that helps his decision. But that was the discussion. Was Goddard a better play this week than Zeke?
Yeah. I mean, I think it might be. I mean, Goddard, he's been getting touches, he's been pulling in touchdowns, and Zeke hasn't been doing either of those.
Yeah, so tough times for the Dallas Cowboy offense. Now, from the Ravens' perspective, Lamar Jackson has disappointed everyone who went up into as high as the second round to take him in fantasy drafts this year. Not sure if he'll be back this week, but if he is, is in a 10-team league, is Lamar Jackson a starter for you this week?
If he's playing and we have clearance that he's playing before 1 p.m. on Sunday, yeah, you're starting him. I think he's a high-end QB1 in this matchup. The Cowboys are giving up the 10th most points to quarterbacks, and they're giving up the 5th most points to running backs. Now, I know Lamar Jackson isn't a running back, but it just shows that the Cowboys can't stop the run. Yeah. So I think this is going to be that week where Lamar Jackson, if healthy, would be a, you know, the Lamar Jackson we saw last year. The problem is, though, that we've got so many questions surrounding this. I actually just did a write-up on Fantasy Pros about this less than an hour ago, because what they said is that he's eligible to return for Tuesday's game, and they'll know if he's eligible to return on Sunday. But that leaves so many questions. Is he going to start? Two, is he going to have a full workload without any practice this week? Three, are there going to be any lingering effects from his COVID infection? Four, I mean, let's say, I mean, there's so many things that go into this. The other big thing is they said his 10-day isolation period ends on Sunday. And if he has medical clearance, then they'll say that he's able to play on Tuesday. Are we going to get all that information to us before kickoff on Sunday's games? So if you've got Lamar Jackson right now, it's tough because, you know, he's a smash play against the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. But with all this uncertainty, you almost need a backup.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully, depending on your league, you know, I know in our league we have kind of a thing where, you know, if you're starting someone who's playing in a Tuesday game, our commissioners will kind of let you have a sub from your bench, a designated sub, in case that game gets canceled or something like that. But even in this case, that would not apply, right?
Well, because
we don't know, you know, it's really Lamar Jackson status, not the game status. Yeah. So you're definitely rolling the dice. You're playing some Russian roulette there with Lamar Jackson if you don't have another, you know, startable option. In that case,
if you think it's been frustrating having Lamar Jackson on your team so far this week, wait until you stream Carson Wentz. He puts up 8 points, and then Lamar Jackson puts up 35 on your bench.
Right, and that's where it's like, especially if you drafted Lamar Jackson, right? You're either, like, depending on where you took him, you're either not in the playoffs or you're fighting for a playoff spot right now for the most part. And to have something like that happen would have me furious.
I drafted Lamar Jackson in the second round, but I picked up James Robinson off of waivers. So I feel like that kind of wastes itself up.
Definitely. Well, I know that I'm a Steeler fan here, but don't you think it's ridiculous that the Cowboys play on Thanksgiving on Thursday? The Ravens and the Steelers are supposed to play Thanksgiving night. They don't. They end up playing Wednesday. And they have to turn around and play Monday. But then the Cowboys, who haven't played since last Thursday, get to wait until Tuesday. So they basically get a free bye week.
They got a free bye week. That's a really good point.
And the Ravens, they really could have played this game Monday, but
they're
giving Lamar Jackson another day to get off the COVID list.
Yeah, man.
The corruption. And I also want to say, to your point about, you know, all this stuff with, you know, you don't know if this guy's going to play, and, you know, just fantasy commissioners everywhere, deserve a welcome, a thank you from all fantasy players this year. It has been difficult managing a league this year. And you know, this was definitely a weird year for COVID, and it continues.
Let me know what timestamp that's at so I can send this to my league and let yeah, them right. know.
I told my league I'm taking a 10% commissioner's fee for running it during COVID.
I've been losing sleep this year as a commissioner.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough year. So before we move off of this matchup, let's try to sort out this Ravens backfield. It looks like J.K. Dobbins has been cleared. He will be back on Tuesday. I'm not 100% sold on, or I'm not clear on Mark Ingram. So if either of you guys know about what his status is for Tuesday's game,
he's good to go.
Okay. So we got the three-headed monster back in Baltimore. And we don't know who's under center. Are any Ravens running backs startable for you this week?
Yeah. Dobbins. I love this guy. He was my number two rookie running back before the draft. And once he went to Baltimore, I slid him down my rankings a little bit. You know, you got Lamar Jackson, who runs a lot. You got Ingram, who I thought was going to shoulder the heavy workload. But I mean, that dude is just so good. Like when you watch him play, like he is so much better than every other guy out there. Yeah. I think the thing that worries me with Dobbins is that we've seen it a lot this year where he rips off these huge runs. He gets down into the red zone and then they bring in Gus the Bus. So Dobbins hasn't really had the opportunity to punch in touchdowns, but oh man, I love Dobbins. Don't be surprised when Dobbins is going as a top 15 pick next year in redraft leagues.
Yeah, I think he's going to be very popular in redraft leagues. It's you know, certainly someone in dynasty and keeper leagues you should be taking a look at. And really, at 6-5, I think at some point the Ravens have to look at their three backs and be like, this is the most explosive guy we have. Yeah. And you know, there was an interesting stat that I saw that even when you go back to his Ohio State days. He has been better with more volume than he is with less.
Yep.
He gets better when he has 15 or more carries, even when going back to his Ohio State days. And with the Ravens fighting for a playoff spot here, at some point you got to say, hey, you know, Mark Ingram, thank you for everything. But, you know, these other two guys are running the ball better than you because Gus Edwards, when it comes to, you know, percentage of carries where he just gains yardage, is really good as well. So I can understand why you might want to throw him into the mix and give him 8 to 10 carries or something like that. But Dobbins needs 15 or more carries going forward. And if the Ravens don't figure that out towards the end of this year, you know, I think we could see they'll probably still make the playoffs, but they're certainly not going to have the year that I think they will. But hopefully they at least figure that out by next year.
Well, there's two things that Gus Edwards and Mark Ingram are worlds better than J.K. Dobbins, and that's pass protection. And that's why J.K. Dobbins isn't getting that full workload right now. I mean, Mark Ingram, it's one of my favorite things to see. I mean, that man just blows up linebackers. Like anybody coming in on a blitz, and Mark Ingram just levels them. Yeah. Gus can do the same thing. So until he can get up to speed on NFL pass protection, I don't think we're going to see him really as that guy. But this offseason, Mark Ingram can get cut and save the Ravens about $10 million.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any chance Ingram comes back next year. They're going to be focusing on J.K. Dobbins getting his pass protection up, and I think that he's going to be the workhorse next year with Gus kind of playing a third down role.
Yeah, so in dynasty leagues, definitely should be looking for J.K. Dobbins. And, you know, it's funny you bring up the pass protection because, you know, as fantasy managers and players, we care nothing about that, right? We don't care at all about that. And,
I don't want him to be a good, because that means he's not running a route when they're passing.
Right. Exactly, right? So it's like, we want guys like DeAndre Swift and J.K. Dobbins and Jonathan Taylor, you know, who we see all this upside in to get all – we want them to be like RB1s like they should be, yet they're stuck in these three-man committees, and it's because of things like pass protection or things that coaches care about that we don't.
So we talked about James Robinson real briefly earlier, but that's when I snagged him off waivers because I saw Doug Marrone said something. He goes, this guy's been pass protecting like he's been in the league for 5 years. Mm. And I picked up my phone immediately. Like, I need this guy on my team. And that's what it is. Like, if you can pass protect, you're going to get the snaps in the NFL.
Yes, and I think from now on, that will be the preseason report I pay attention to most for running backs. Who can block? Because I know that guy's at least going to be on the field. All right. So that covers all the games that we had so far this week. So let's get to the much anticipated start-sit advice. We have a lot of questions that came in throughout the show. We'll start with those of you who reach out to us on social media. For those of you who don't follow us on social media, you can follow us on Twitter at @all_in_pod and All In Network on IG and Facebook. So you can see that there at the bottom of your screen. Let's start with Andrew from Twitter had a question for us here. We'll put it up on the screen. He's a Will Fuller, Robbie Anderson, and Kenny Golladay owner. So he is looking at a rough week here. He is looking to he needs two of these guys to start out of Gabriel Davis, someone we talked about earlier, Jerry Jeudy, Rashad Perriman, and Kiki Cutie. I think that's how you say his name, who will obviously get more targets with Will Fuller coming out. Of these guys, of this group here, who are the two that you're going with this week?
I like Cutie a lot. I've got him in some DFS lineups, just kind of a next man up scenario. You know, Sean Watson's got to throw the ball to somebody, and Brandon Cooks can't catch 30 balls a game. So I like Cutie this week. The one thing I do, though, is swap out Jeudy, who you've currently got in there. Now I would put in Gabriel Davis. Jeudy just has not been that good. Averaging, I know this off the top of my head because I was just looking at his numbers yesterday. He's averaging 8.1 points per game. He has only hit the 20-point mark twice this season, and it's required a touchdown to do so in each of those games. In the games where he hasn't scored a touchdown, he's averaging less than 3 catches per game. Put up a donut last week, but I'm not going to really pull that one against him because of who was playing quarterback.
Right.
But I think Jeudy is going to be an elite wide receiver in the NFL at some point, but it's not going to happen this year. I think it's time to give up on Gabriel Davis. Or I'm sorry, give up on Jerry Jeudy. So yeah, I'd go with Gabriel Davis and Kiki Cutie in this one.
Yeah, so I hope Andrew is not fighting for a playoff spot because he is in a tough spot with that being his receiving core to pick
sure
from.
Sure is.
But I feel you, bro. I feel you. I really do. So let's go to our YouTube channel. We had a comment here where we're going to pick three of these four running backs. First of all, congrats on compiling this running back core.
Right.
And so of these guys, and for those of you listening on the audio, we have Devontae Booker, who will be starting this week in place of Josh Jacobs out in Oakland, Antonio Gibson, Nick Chubb, Kenyon Drake. I think this is a pretty obvious three, but Dave, who are you taking out of these three guys?
I don't know if this is the obvious one, but I'd bench Kenyon Drake.
I said the same thing.
All right.
I was thinking that too.
I'll kind of go down my rankings with these guys. You've got Nick Chubb. That's a guy that you're never benching ever. Right. I mean, Nick Chubb, he's arguably the best pure runner in the NFL. Antonio Gibson coming off a 3-touchdown game. We already talked about how the Steelers have been susceptible to big plays, which is Antonio Gibson's forte. So I love Antonio Gibson this week. And then Devontae Booker. I mean, just like Sean Watson's got to throw the ball to somebody, and that's why you're starting Kiki Cutie, they've got to run the ball. And Raiders are playing the Jets this week, which, I mean, that's just almost too easy. You got somebody that is going to, you know, see a couple touches to Jalen Richard here and there, but, you know, he's almost a lock for 15 carries, can easily see 20-plus in this matchup. I think it's going to be a game script working in his favor. So I've actually got Devontae Booker as my 12th overall running back this week. Not that you want to bench Kenyon Drake, because, I mean, he's no scrub. I've got him as, you know, a middling RB2, but just with those other three guys you got to bench Drake this week. Yeah. I'm in a similar position where I've got Devontae Booker as well, and I don't want to do it, but I'm benching Giovanni Bernard this week. Sometimes you just got to make that tough choice.
What a terrible problem you have, Dave. I feel terrible.
All right. So next one we have came from our earlier Twitter questions as well. Kiki Cutie again in this one. And this time we're picking out of Rager and Sammy Watkins, full point PPR. Your guy, Elvin Ryan, chimed in and said, Watkins, do you agree with him?
Oh, man, I love Elvin. He's such a great guy. but no, I'm going to go against Elvin on this one a little bit. I'm going Kiki Cutie in this matchup as well. Talked about Philly a little bit earlier. I love Jalen Reagor, man. I love that dude, but I just don't think we're going to see, just like Jerry Jeudy. I think he's a guy that is either going to take a couple more years to develop or just be a complete bust. But either way, he's not somebody that you want to start right now as a rookie. Sammy Watkins, I wouldn't say 100% Kiki Kuti. Kiki Kuti is going to give you the safer floor. So if you need, you know, 8 to 10 points, if you're pretty confident in the rest of your lineup and you want to start Kiki Kuti, go ahead. But if you feel like you need a big performance, I mean, Sammy Watkins is a guy that can put up a couple touchdowns.
Yeah. So like, if you're a guy like me who has to win by 40 in your league, maybe you're going with Sammy Watkins, right? Because right. that's the kind of guy who can, give you a big output. But
right.
I agree with you there. If you're looking for this, the best of those three options and the safest, certainly Kiki is the best option there. I'm going to throw you a softball here. Well, I'm not going to throw this off. Someone from YouTube is going to throw you the softball here. Is it a good move to drop AB for Julio? Yes, right?
For Julio Jones? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Julio's available for whatever reason, Julio Jones, he's the guy in Atlanta right now. I mean, he's the alpha receiver. When he's healthy, he's still the guy. Calvin Ridley, you know, he's having a great season. I love him for it, but Julio Jones is still the guy in Atlanta.
Yeah, wow. Little Munchie, I would love an invite to play in your fantasy league since Julio's on waivers somehow.
Hey man, I'm in a $3,500 league, and Kenny Galladay got dropped this morning. It's that time. 10 teams.
Wow.
And it's just that time of year where people start making weird moves. They want backup quarterbacks. They want backup defenses. They want to start stockpiling running backs. And hey man, I mean it happens. I don't know how Julio got dropped, but I mean. Galladay got dropped in my league.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's go back to Twitter here. We have the lovely Crystal Thomas, who commented on our Twitter page earlier. She is in a must-win situation this week. Her running backs are looking wishy-washy. She has Alvin Kamara, who we talked about earlier, and she has Hines and Taylor. So she's asking, should she trust in the Colts offense and go with Hilton also at the flex, or go with Aguilar, either Aguilar, Watkins, Ayuk. We talked about Ayuk earlier. Who are you going with in this one?
Man, this almost sounds crazy, but benching Kamara. You know, we talked about benching Zeke earlier. I've seen a couple of people that have Hines and Taylor on their team, and they're starting them both, especially this week going up against the Texans. That's not a terrible move, but – No, I would not start T.Y. Hilton over any of those guys. Ayuk would be my number one choice. Watkins is behind him, but I think Ayuk is the guy to start this week in that matchup. But also, you know, it wouldn't be crazy to bench Kamara and start Hines and Taylor. You don't know who the guy is going to be right now, but you do know that team combined is probably like those two guys together are probably going to put up 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. And you don't know who it's going to be, but if you can, you know, kind of divide it down the middle and get the production out of both of them, might not be a terrible move.
Yeah, so tough situation there for Crystal, who's in our Oaks Fantasy League, which is the league she's referring to there. So, Crystal, good luck. I'm out of the playoffs in that one. I hope you beat both of my brothers.
So am I.
Next one we have is Anthony Acosta from our YouTube page. Says he has Jacobs out, or Josh Jacobs, as we mentioned, is out this week. He is thinking about starting Gaskins or looks like Booker or J.K. Dobbins. And then if Swift is healthy, should I start him? So I'm going to assume.
So two one guys. Guy or two guys?
I'm going to assume two. Let's just pick his running backs for him.
All right. Well, I think Gaskins is going to – well, Gaskin. That's I feel like everybody puts that S on the end of his name. It's Miles Gaskin. Everybody yes. does it. I published an article once and made it through editing and then noticed it like 3 days later. And was, but anyway, I think Gaskin is definitely the guy to start. DeAndre Washington's out this week. Well, not officially, but it looks like DeAndre Washington's going to be out. It looks like Salvin Ahmad is going to be out. So that leaves Gaskin the only healthy guy. So I really like Gaskin this week. I think that J.K. Dobbins, as much as I was just singing his praises, I think his risk puts him way below those two guys. As for Swift, though, that's an interesting one because there have been a lot of reports that, you know, he's out of concussion protocol. But did you see his coach was saying that he just hasn't been the same since he took that hit?
Yeah, and he missed. He has still missed. They announced this yesterday, but he didn't practice yesterday or today due to an illness, they said.
Right.
So That's an interesting one.
I've seen concussions have some weird lingering effects. You guys might remember Sidney Crosby missed almost 2 full years of hockey with concussions.
I definitely do remember that.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to keep your eye on. So I wouldn't be totally comfortable starting Swift until we see how he plays post-concussion. So out of these guys, I'd go Gaskin and Booker.
Gotcha. All right. So the rest of our questions are coming from our YouTube channel. We have Matt Daly. This week, it's going to be rough for him. He has Jacobs and Connor out. Whew. And luckily, he has Devontae Booker. And he needs us to pick two out of these three in full PPR out of Devontae Booker, Cam Akers, and Jordan Wilkins. I think Devontae's the one guy you can book, right?
Yeah, 100%. No pun intended. I love that all your listeners are picking up Devontae Booker. You guys must be preaching something good over here if all your listeners got Booker on their roster. But between Cam Akers and Jordan Wilkins, definitely leaning towards Cam Akers. I mean, those guys are both in that RB3 territory where you don't really want to start either of them. So, you know, when you're looking at the higher tier, that's where I prefer volume over ceiling. But once you're getting down to those kind of lower tier guys like Cam Akers and Jordan Wilkins, you got to chase the ceiling. And right now Cam Akers has a higher ceiling. He looked really good in his last game. So I'd go with Booker and Akers in this one.
Agreed. I'd take Booker and Akers there as well. Speaking of Akers, our guy, Deshaun Turner, shout out to Sean, is asking about Cam Akers rest of the season. So where do you see him rest of the season? Obviously most people going into playoffs, you have him in RB3 territory. Does he kind of stay there barring any injuries in that backfield?
Man, you could take a college course on Sean McVay's mindset and still not really know what he's going to do. That guy is so tough to predict. I thought Daryl Henderson was going to be like a legit RB1 for a while. Looked like he was getting it done. The season started off, Malcolm Brown was on an absolute roll. So right now, yeah, Cam Akers looks like he's the guy in that backfield. He's been getting the touches. He looks really good. But I don't know if you know, he's somebody that I know trade deadlines are over in most leagues, but he's not somebody I'm going out of my way to try to target and go after. What they got 4 games left this season for fantasy. He's probably going to have one where he puts up 20 or 25 and the rest, he's probably going to be sitting at like 4 or 5 points. And that's just how it is when you're at that tier of running back. So I'm not too crazy about Akers for the rest of the season.
Well, how do you feel about him in dynasty or keeper formats?
Well, I think that he is the most talented out of that bunch between Malcolm Brown. I think Malcolm Brown, you know, just being the oldest and biggest guy in that backfield, I think that's why he got the start at the beginning of the season. Then Akers got hurt, and then Daryl Henderson kind of took over. But I think when you're looking at pure talent, explosiveness, athleticism, Akers is so far above those other two guys. You know, he's getting his touches this year, kind of getting up to speed. I think once he gets a full offseason and earns McVay's trust a little bit, I think that he's going to be the number one running back on the team in 2021.
He was one of my biggest disappointments this year. I really thought that because McVay loves to run the ball. I mean, they're run heavy. We
thought
him as a high flying offense for a second there, but really it's running based. And Todd Gurley had that great season. I really thought he was going to come in and have a huge impact, but I was.
It's been disappointing.
Yeah,
and I think that early injury kind of set him back, right? Because you know Daryl Henderson then played really well for a few games in there, and you know they like Malcolm Brown, so he wasn't going anywhere. So he had, I think, he just automatically, because in that first game he did get a decent amount of work. Yep. In that first game, he over Daryl Henderson, and then when he went down, Daryl Henderson played really well and just kind of, you know, muddied up that backfield where McVay was just kind of taking a hot hand approach after that.
The real problem is they're all good running backs. You know, a lot of times when you see these committees, there's one guy where you're scratching your head, like, why is this guy still getting touches? But it doesn't really feel like that with the Rams. Like they're all really good running backs. So it makes sense that they're all getting touches.
Agreed. So last.
Might have lost Coop there for a second.
Yeah, I think he froze up for a second.
I think he did. We'll take some of these YouTube comments that that I see.
All right, fire them at me.
So let's see. I don't know if he hasn't. I don't know if he's gotten to all of these yet. So I'm gonna just fire you some from my own team because I'm having some questions too.
I'm here to help.
Okay, so. I'm in a dynasty league.
All right.
And I'm trying to figure out guys to carry over for next year. And so I've got Terry McLaurin is a definite. CEH is a definite. Tyreek Hill is a definite. Now, is the last one I have is I toss up between I carry one more guy, and I have J.K. Dobbins and C.D. Lamb.
I like C.D. Lamb. Really? I mean, it's tough. I said I like C.D. Lamb, but I think J.K. Dobbins is the better choice. I think you got to go with J.K. Dobbins just because of the positional scarcity. Okay. There's a lot of wide receivers out there. You know, the difference between the number 10 wide receiver and the number 50 wide receiver is only a handful of points. The difference between a number 10 running back and a number 50 running back is huge. So if you've got an opportunity with somebody like J.K. Dobbins, who could be a top 10, top 15 running back, I think you've got to prioritize that over Lamb. All right. Well, it looks like I lost both guys on this show. So I am going to hop off now. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Be sure to follow @all_in_pod for next week's and enjoy this.
Hey, sorry about that, guys. We had some internet problems. Everybody got kicked out of the chat. So thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. We appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to episode 57. So you guys can catch our podcast on YouTube. So if you missed the live, you can catch the replay there. You can also catch our NBA portion there as well. But thank you guys for tuning in to another episode, and we will see you guys again next time. Peace.